Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are live in New York City, the Big Apple, at Westminster Kennel Club, and I have what I think might be one of my coolest guests yet. This is Mr. Michael LaFave, and not everybody will know that name, but you will know the voice.
Morning. Good to see you this morning.
Be with Excellent. You. And honestly, everyone will know the Let's Bring in the Hound Group.
That's right.
It is the quintessential start to every Westminster Kennel Club. And you've been doing this since 2001?
In 2001, that's correct.
Right. So for many of us, a long part of our history in the sport. Mm-hmm. And you come from Basset Hounds, yes?
Yeah, my wife and I raised Basset Hounds. We had them for, I guess, the better part of about 30 years. So, yeah, it wasn't my wife's original breed. I was not a dog person. And when my wife and I got married back in 1969, it was pretty clear that we were going to have dogs.
I love it. Well, I think that's so many of us. You know, the husbands get brought along, right?
That's right.
It's pretty normal. So announcer for Westminster Kennel Club is pretty much a dream gig. How'd you come up with this?
Well, it's an interesting story. I was president of the Eastern Dog Club in Boston.
Okay.
And Chet Collier, who was the show chairman here at that time, was my vice president in the Eastern Dog Club.
Okay.
And in that year, in 2001, unfortunately, Roger Karras, who had been the announcer for many, many years, fell ill. And so Chet asked me if I'd come down on an emergency basis and do the show.
Right.
Because we had announced, not broadcast, but we'd announced in the auditorium when we had our show there. And so I said I would be glad to help him out with that. And
oh, my gosh.
Had to go down and do a audition for USA at that time.
Right.
And then ended up coming down 2001 doing my first show. And unfortunately, after that, Roger passed away. He was quite ill at that time.
Right. I remember this time frame.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, a horrible story, but at the same time, what a stroke of luck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
that's right.
Serendipity, we call that. Being at the right time at the right place.
Yeah.
Wow. And so the stories that you could tell, this is my kind of thinking. You see everything from behind the curtain, basically. So tell us, I know that everybody loves what you talk about. Your descriptions of the dogs. Mm-hmm. Tell us where that comes from.
Well, it actually goes back to Roger. The original script for the show, and it is highly scripted, goes back to Roger's writing of it, and then subsequent to that, over the years, it's been edited and re-edited. In fact, at one point in time, David Fry and I and Gordon Beck, who was the senior producer at that time, went out to all of the parent clubs.
I remember that. I was president of my club. Yes.
Give us information that they'd like to see, and we got all that information back, and of course, every description that came back from them said, good with children. We figured we can't exactly do that. So we recrafted all of that script that time. So for all intents and purposes, the information has really come from the parent clubs.
Right, and that's, like I said, I was president of my club. I wrote what you read for Wirehair Pointers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so I remembered that. That's why I wanted people to really know that so much of everybody talks, oh, I'm mad about this, or they said the wrong thing about that. And I get that, but I love what you have to say for this very reason. And I wanted people to know that, you know, to really hear that.
Right. I think, you know, it just isn't crafted out of thin air about something that we'd like to have in there.
Right.
We try to be as accurate as we can to give a picture of the dog to the audience. And it's important to understand that the bulk of the audience are not dog people.
Right.
So, you know, we try to be as clear as we can and give them not a sense only of what the dog looks like, but kind of temperament.
Yes, and history. And
yeah, that's
absolutely.
Right.
And that's so important because this is our Super Bowl, right? But it's for the pet-loving public. this is amazing. And how many people started in dogs? And I interview people, 260 episodes, I interview all these people, and half of them, I swear, decided to start showing dogs or get a purebred dog because of Westminster Kennel Club.
Isn't that interesting?
True, because I saw it on TV.
Yeah, I was amazed, in fact, when I did the show in 2001, the thing that I didn't anticipate was all the people that were going to contact me, friends and, you know, people I'd known over the year. Oh, I saw you on the dog show. And these were not dog people.
Right.
In fact, a lot of them don't even have dogs.
Right.
But they watched the Westminster show.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's what's so great about this show is that crossover, right? From our Super Bowl to the dreams of that little kid watching it at 7 years old.
Right. Right, yeah. Exactly.
And you're the voice of those dreams. I'm sorry, but that's the case, right? So what's like a favorite moment? Can you pick one out that really stood out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. That's easy. In 2002, having gone beyond 9/11, we had an extensive recognition of the rescue dogs and the people that worked with them.
I was there
that year, and that was just an incredible, heart-touching,
goosebumps,
presentation. It really was something. Mm-hmm. And probably of all the things that I've done and seen here, that's the best.
Wow. Yeah. That is pretty awesome. And so do you personally have a favorite? I mean, you can't have a favorite, right, when you're talking on the announcement. Come on, you're giving me a face. Your favorite dogs each year, do you pick one in your mind?
You know, I really don't.
Really?
No.
That's amazing, because I'd be hard-pressed.
I'm so concentrated
focused
on doing the job and getting the announcements out and describing the dogs and that sort of thing. If you were to ask me, do I have a favorite dog, the answer would be yes. It would be Norfolk Terriers.
Really?
Oh, yeah. My wife and I owned a Norfolk. She, in fact, just passed away last year at age 14. And I just love that little dog. I love my Bassets.
From Bassets to Norfolk, that's a little...
Well, we have a Whippet also.
Okay. Well, so Whippets are easy to love,
yeah,
right? I mean, yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I just concentrate on doing the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not a favorite winner over the years. Couldn't pick one out.
You know, there are so many beautiful dogs, and so many of them have shown so well. One of the dogs that sticks in my mind is Uno.
Yes!
You know, he was such an extraordinary dog. It showed so incredibly, you know.
Mm-hmm. Really, and he lit the fire in the audience.
It's true. And he carried that reputation more than a lot of the dogs do.
Right. They're all beautiful and they all have enough sparkle. But certain ones of them are just, they touch
they're
you.
They're special.
They're special.
Yeah.
I loved the Papillon. Remember, a supernatural being? That was one of my favorites. He just stood up in his little bowl.
Yeah.
So cool.
Well, I'll tell you a funny little story about that. My mother obviously always watched. And she would, after the show was over and I would call her, she would always say two things to me, one of which is, so when are they going to put you on camera more? And I would always tell her, Mother, they're not paying me for my beautiful face, right? And the second thing she would always say is, when is a real dog going to win that show? Because my mother thought dogs ought to look like German Shepherds and, you
Beagles
know.
And,
the little dogs in the bowls did not touch her heart much.
That is fabulous. Well, and I mean, I do this sometimes with some of my guests that are judges. I say, okay, so give me a lineup. Give me a best in show lineup. Give me a winner of all the dogs you've seen of each group in best in show, and their eyes bug out.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's the opportunity to see that many great dogs.
Oh, it is. It is, you know. And that's one of the things that I often say to my non-doggy friends. I say, you know, because they want to know always, how do they pick those dogs when they've got those dogs that all look so different, you know? And I explain that they have a standard, and they really literally, when they get to the point of doing best in show, you could close your eyes, point, and pick out
and
a
not
great
go wrong.
Dog.
And really not go wrong.
You know?
Yeah. And I think this has been a fun year. This has been a really fun year. Another gal and I do a handicapping. Right? Like the same, like the bracket challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Only we kind of, and so we had it all laid out and we're like, oh no, man, everybody's brackets are busted. And so do you see that too? You see the years that things go, according to plan, this is who everybody thought this would win, it wins. And then you have the years that are like, where did that come from?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think that's one of the great things about the sport. There is some sense of predictability because, you know, you're really looking at these top dogs. And when you get down to the final seven, these dogs have won incredible amounts.
And they've won because they're good dogs.
Because they're really good. And then there are those years where the judge points and you go, no kidding, you know?
Exactly. Wow. But I think that's, as you say, one of the great joys of this dog show is that there are always going to be those years that things just don't go the way you think they're going to go on the bracket challenge.
Yeah. One of the things I find interesting, too, is the fact that the people who are watching the show, television or whatever, they hear the audience.
Right.
And so they have some level of expectation. Well, the audience, you know, is cheering that dog. It must be going to win.
This must be a good one.
And then the judge points over here and they go, how did that happen?
That's fabulous. Then again, it speaks to the caliber of judges that they bring in for the garden. It speaks to all of those things.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think this is a particularly cool panel, right? Pat Trotter and Peter Green and all these people on the same panel. You're like, wow.
Yeah, it is really.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. One of my favorite panels I've seen in years, for sure. And so you think you're going to get to keep doing this for a while? You see you're going to be the voice for a while longer? We like that predictability.
Well, I'm supposed to come back next year.
Okay.
So,
day at a time?
Yeah, that's what we do. You know, there'll come a day when I won't,
right.
But nothing lasts forever.
But
I enjoy doing it and, you know, having the opportunity to come. Of course, I live in New Mexico, so.
So Eastern Dog Club, you must have moved at some point.
Yeah, I lived in Massachusetts for 33 years and then retired from my consulting business and moved to New Mexico with my wife.
Okay. So this is a nice trip back to the East Coast, visit, see everybody.
Yeah, unfortunately, it always seems to snow when I come back
here. Well, of course. And it's snowing today as we speak.
It is snowing today.
And it's been so good. All right. Well, Michael, thank you so much. I will not take more of your time. I know you're planning out your show and practicing and studying. And I just want to mention to listeners, here's a guy that's been doing this for 18 years, pretty much the same thing, and he's still practicing. So you guys need to pay attention to that, too.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. This is Laura Reeves of Pure Dog Talk, and we are here at the Trupanion booth live in New York City at Westminster Kennel Club. And I have my dear friend, Yvonne Rangel, sitting next to me. And Yvonne tells me that she signed up for Trupanion insurance for her own personal dogs that she breeds. And I want you to tell me why, Yvonne.
Because I want to have the peace of mind that my puppies are going to be protected wherever they go.
Yes.
And the best part is it's no cost for us, the breeders. So what else can you ask for? The puppy will be protected and I don't have to pay for it.
Bingo! Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we have a very rare and very special guest with us here.
A rare species.
A rare species, a TV superstar.
Yeah, right.
Yukon Vet has joined us today.
Hi.
How are you?
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Excellent.
Yep.
And I am so excited to talk to you. Not only is it really very cool that you've come and you're participating in Westminster Kennel Club, which I think is great promotion for the purebred dogs, for your show. It's
fun.
A great, right?
It is. It's a good cross-pollination.
Exactly. Exactly right. But what I desperately want to talk about is the Iditarod, because it's just coming up.
Oh, okay.
Right? And I would love anything you can share with us. You participate in that as a vet? No?
No. Actually don't know a ton about it. Like, I have done sled dog, like the vet checks.
Right.
For the Yukon Quest.
Okay.
I've never been on the Iditarod.
I've
also worked on another one called the Percy DeWolf, which is a small one in the Yukon.
Yes.
And that goes from Dawson City, Yukon, up to Eagle, Alaska.
But this is like really your cool, neck of the woods,
one. Yeah. So and the Iditarod stays within Alaska, and it's also an awesome race. Yeah. So.
It's amazing. And talk about, because you live it, you do it. So what are you looking for on the vet checks? What are you seeing? And how healthy are those dogs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I see a lot of similarities, actually, at the dog show in terms of dogs so excited to do what they're about to do. I was thinking about that the whole time in the agility, actually, because you can see the agility dogs are getting ready. They are, like, intense. They're, like, so happy. They're so excited. They're jumping straight up in the air because they're trying
to
contain that energy before they're allowed to run the course. And that's exactly what a lot of the huskies and the different sled dog breeds look like.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in their harness, when the harnesses come out, they're literally jumping straight up in the air in their harness. They're so happy. And you know, those long endurance races are tough, but these dogs are very well trained for it. They are
and conditioned for it.
They're conditioned for it. And like in any sport, most of the people are fantastic. They're looking after the health of the animals. It's the health of the animals first. It's a huge investment. Most of the people are not making much. It's not like, and so it's like their life, everything is going into it. And most of the vets are actually volunteering. So it's really all
I didn't realize that.
Yes, it's all volunteer for the stuff I've done.
Wow, so very cool.
Which I'm happy to do. It's really an incredible sport. Again, like the bond between the people and their dogs. And I mean, that is it, right? That's the age-old thing.
It's all it is.
Why we have dogs. It's that bond, you know.
Human-animal bond.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talk about it all the time on this podcast. We just had a fellow, there's a thing called the Human Animal Bond Research Institute.
Oh,
who knew?
For sure.
I didn't know that until I met the guy. I was like, oh yeah, you have to come talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's fabulous. And it makes us healthier, mentally and physically healthier.
Yeah.
That connection.
Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, I missed that a bit. I started out as a vet doing mostly wildlife work and some zoo work. And a lot of that wildlife work is not hands-on for obvious reasons. It's very stressful for the animals. So we try and do a lot of our, you know, figuring things out from a distance as much as we can. And then if you have to intervene, then you do.
Right.
And that has a lot of its own rewards in terms of, you know, getting animals back to the wild. But I really missed the hands-on and working with people. With domestic animals and seeing people with their pet. And that bond was just, I missed it. And I think when I first started out of vet school, kind of maybe was a little snobby about the wildlife and like, you know, I don't want to just work on dogs. And then it's like, you know, I grew up, to be honest, I grew up. And now it's like, I miss my clients. I miss their dogs. And, you know, I cry with them when we say goodbye to their family member, you know, to their dog. Right. And it's just, I just can't believe how much I've grown as a person and as a vet, actually.
We grow, man.
That's right.
It's true.
It's been amazing. But now I love doing the small animal work and working with dogs in particular.
Nice. Yeah. And so one of the things that I thought would be really great for you to touch on, a lot of places, you know, climate change, the whole nine yards, people are getting snow that aren't used to getting snow.
No.
People are getting extreme cold.
We're
going to
have
beach fun
up in Alaska soon.
Right?
You know?
There's almost 2 feet of snow in Seattle right now, and this is insanity. So talk to us. Talk to my listeners. How do we manage this? I mean, yes, there are livestock guardian breeds that are designed to be outside all the time, but there's a lot of us that have pets that are like, No, I'll be inside. I mean, talk to us about those kind of extreme climate things.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely see it in the Yukon.
Right.
I mean, there's just no getting around it in the Yukon. It's in your face. When I've been there 28 years, and we used to have every single winter, we would have weeks of 40 below.
Wow.
And for the last 10, 15 years, we get like maybe, you know, less and less anyway. We still get our 40 below, but it's just, it's definitely more rare. And although I'm a little selfishly thankful for that, I know how hard it is in the animals. We also get temperatures that warm up. It goes way above freezing. It gets up to 30, 40 degrees. It rains in January, and then it drops to 40 below. And
oh my gosh.
That is so hard on the hibernating animals.
Right.
All their insulating snow melts. It sinks down into a lot of their dens. It freezes them out, and we have major like die-offs.
Do you lose the dog or lose the hibernation animals?
Bears, rams, squirrels.
Oh my gosh.
Like a lot of the hibernating animals. It's just so hard on them. So it's, you know, for sure it's the effects on all of us.
Right.
But I mean, all these species, you know, lynx, all these animals are like designed for the cold.
Yeah.
They're designed for the snow.
And when
losing
it switches,
it's tough. It's
so how do dogs in the Yukon, how do the regular dogs, not the sled dogs, how do they deal with the cold? Do you have boots or?
Yeah. People have boots. We have a pug and
I have two.
Oh, God. I'm like a ridiculous pug fanatic.
The pugs are the
best. I'm a pug fanatic. And so
love
Daisy
it.
May Loverpants, our pug.
Daisy May what? Loverpants?
DMLP. You can call her. That's her handle. She is a diva, but she loves to go with us to the cabin. And so we couldn't find a snowsuit round enough for her, I'm embarrassed to say. So we did have one, but she keeps busting out of it. So what I just do is I put on a big snowsuit, and she literally gets in my snowsuit with me, and we snowmobile 2 hours up to the cabin. Every now and then she pokes her little face out and then puts it back in.
Oh, my God.
But I mean, I think, people are using booties. They put snowsuits on their dogs up there all the time.
Right.
It's a lot of extra work, but they do it.
And okay, so that's what I'm saying.
People
for
have
our people
Mexican
down here.
Hairless in my town. And they do
are
a
you
great
serious?
Job. Yeah, the dog is always inside. It goes out and does his little business. They have like a heat lamp right by where he goes and does his business. So he only goes there.
All right,
it's
so all
amazing.
You all in the frozen polar vortex, you need a heat lamp so your dog can go to the bathroom.
To go outside,
Oh, my God. And so snow I mean, snow isn't as, you don't have the freezing cold, but there's other issues that go with that. So what are some of the concerns you see with that? We have lots of snow with dogs that aren't familiar with the concept of lots of snow.
I mean, for sure. But honestly, the dogs that grow up around it, they adapt. Like, they're smart. They figure it out. They know when it's really deep snow not to go too far, you know? So they kind of
fall in that hole.
Yeah, yeah. So it's they do good. Right. They adapt, which is great. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And so what has been your favorite part of Westminster Kennel Club so far? This is the first time you've come, right?
Oh, man, there's so many favorites. Well, I got to meet Biggie the Pug yesterday.
Biggie the Pug is fabulous.
Fangirl. I had a fangirl
total
moment.
Fangirl.
And I was sitting courtside at the, right down on the floor for the evening Best of Breeds last night. And there was, like, puppy breath wafting. I could literally, I swear, I could smell it.
Oh, my God, that's fabulous.
It was just the whole thing. Like, it is one of the greatest shows on earth. I just can't
believe.
It really is. I can't believe there weren't more people here. I mean, it's kind of a best-kept secret. And so I'm glad I'm getting in now.
Definitely. Floor level.
Yeah. Because, man, it's going to blow up. You can just feel it.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, thank you. Yeah. I know you have to run. I so appreciate you sneaking us a little slide in here.
No problem. It was great to meet you.
Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Thanks.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.